Chapter 41. I have read a fact of distressing significance in that, apostrophe said Knight. Since you like them, your dislike to having them must be towards me? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, it isn't. Apostrophe apostrophe, what then? Do you like me? Apostrophe, Elfry deepened in tint, and looked into the distance with features shaped to an expression of the nicest criticism as regarded her answer. I like you pretty well, apostrophe she at length murmured mildly. Not very much? Apostrophe apostrophe, you are so sharp with me, and say hard things, and so how can I? Apostrophe apostrophe, she replied evasively. You think me a fogey, I suppose? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, I don't, I mean I do, I don't know what I think you, I mean. Let us go to Papa, apostrophe responded Elfride, with somewhat of a flurried delivery. Well, I'll tell you my object in getting the present, apostrophe said Knight, with a composure intended to remove from her mind any possible impression of his being, what he was her lover. You see, it was the very least I could do in common civility. Apostrophe apostrophe, Elfride felt rather blank at this lucid statement. Knight continued, putting away the case. I felt as anybody naturally would have, you know, that my words on your choice the other day were invidious and unfair, and thought an apology should take a practical shape. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh yes. Apostrophe apostrophe, Elfride was sorry she could not tell why, that he gave such a legitimate reason. It was a disappointment, that he had all the time a cool motive, which might be stated to anybody without raising a smile. Had she known they were offered in that spirit, she would certainly have accepted the seductive gift. And the tantalizing feature was that perhaps he suspected her to imagine them offered as a lover's token, which was mortifying enough, if they were not. Mrs. Swankert came now to where they were sitting, to select a flat boulder for spreading their tablecloth upon, and, amid the discussion on that subject, the matter pending between Knight and Elfride was shelved for a while. He read her refusal so certainly as the bashfulness of a girl in a novel position, that, upon the whole, he could tolerate such a beginning. Could Knight have been told that it was a sense of fidelity struggling against new love, whilst no less assuring, as to his ultimate victory, it might have entirely abstracted the wish to secure it. At the same time, a slight constraint of manner was visible between them for the remainder of the afternoon. The tide turned, and they were obliged to ascend to higher ground. The day glided on to its end with the usual quiet dreamy passivity of such occasions when every deed done, and thing thought is in endeavoring to avoid, doing and thinking more. Looking idly over the verge of a crag, they beheld their stone dining table gradually being splashed upon, and their crumbs and fragments all washed away by the incoming sea. The vicar drew a moral lesson from the scene, Knight replied in the same satisfied strain. And then the waves rolled in furiously the neutral green, and blue tongues of water slid up the slopes, and were metamorphosed into foam by a careless blow, falling back white and faint, and leaving trailing followers behind. The passing of a heavy shower was the next scene, driving them to shelter in a shallow cave, after which the horses were put in, and they started to return homeward. By the time they reached the higher levels the sky had again cleared, and the sunset rays glanced directly upon the wet uphill road they had climbed. The ruts formed by their carriage wheels on the ascent, a pair of Lilliputian canals, were as shining bars of gold, tapering to nothing in the distance. Upon this also they turned their backs, a night spread over the sea. The evening was chilly, and there was no moon. Knight sat close to Elfride, and, when the darkness rendered the position of a person a matter of uncertainty, particularly close, Elfride edged away. I hope you'll allow me my place ungrudgingly? Apostrophe apostrophe, he whispered. Oh yes, 'tis the least I can do in common civility, apostrophe she said, accenting the words, so that he might recognize them as his own returned. Both of them felt delicately balanced between two possibilities. Thus they reached home. To Tonight this mild experience was delightful. It was to him a gentle innocent time, a time which, though there may not be much in it, seldom repeats itself in a man's life, and has a peculiar dearness when glanced at retrospectively. He is not inconveniently deep in love, and is lulled by a peaceful sense of being able to enjoy the most trivial thing with a childlike enjoyment. The movement of a wave, the color of a stone, anything, was enough for Knight's drowsy thoughts of that day to precipitate themselves upon. Even the sermonizing platitudes the vicar had delivered himself of, chiefly because something seemed to be professionally required of him in the presence of a man of Knight's proclivities, were swallowed whole. The presence of Elfride led him, not merely to tolerate that kind of talk from the necessities of ordinary courtesy, but he listened to it, took in the ideas with an enjoyable make, believed that they were proper and necessary, and indulged in a conservative feeling that the face of things was complete. Entering her room, that evening Elfride found a packet for herself on the dressing table. How it came there she did not know. She tremblingly undid the folds of white paper that covered it. Yes, it was the treasure of a Morocco case, containing those treasures of ornament as he had refused in the daytime. Elfride dressed herself in them for a moment, looked at herself in the glass, blushed red, and put them away. They filled her dreams all that night. Never had she seen anything so lovely, and never was it more clear that as an honest woman she was in duty bound to refuse them. Why, it was not equally clear to her that duty required more vigorous coordinate conduct as well, let those who dissect her say. The next morning glared in like a specter upon her. It was Stephen's letter day, and she was bound to meet the postman, to stealthily do a deed as he had never liked, to secure an end she now had ceased to desire. But she went. There were two letters. One was from the bank at St. Launce's, in which as he had a small private deposit, probably something about interest. She put that in her pocket for a moment, and going indoors and upstairs, to be safer from observation, tremblingly opened Stephen's. What was this he said to her? She was to go to the St. Launce's Bank, and take a sum of money which they had received private advices to pay her. The sum was £200. There was no check, order, or anything of the nature of guarantee. In fact, the information amounted to this. The money was now in the St. Launce's Bank, standing in her name. She instantly opened the other letter. It contained a deposit note from the bank for the sum of £200 which had that day been added to her account. Stephen's information, then, was correct, and the transfer made. I have saved this in 1 year, apostrophe Stephen's letter went on to say, and what so proper as well as pleasant for me to do, as to hand it over to you to keep for your use? I have plenty for myself, independently of this. Should you not be disposed to let it lie idle in the bank, get your father to invest it in your name on good security. It is a little present to you from your more than betrothed. He will, I think, Elfride, feel now that my pretensions to your hand are anything but the dream of a silly boy not worth rational consideration. Apostrophe apostrophe, with a natural delicacy, Elfride, in mentioning her father's marriage, had refrained from all allusion to the pecuniary resources of the lady. Leaving this matter of fact subject, he went on, somewhat after his boyish manner. Do you remember, darling, that first morning of my arrival at your house, when your father read at prayers the miracle of healing the sick of the palsy, where he is told to take up his bed and walk? I do, and I can now so well realize the force of that passage. The smallest piece of mat is the bed of the Oriental, and yesterday I saw a native perform the very action, which reminded me to mention it. But you are better read than I, and perhaps you knew all this long ago. One day I bought some small native idols to send home to you as curiosities, but afterwards finding they had been cast in England, made to look old, and shipped over, I threw them away in disgust. Speaking of this reminds me that we are obliged to import all our house-building ironwork from England. Never was such foresight required to be exercised in building houses as here. Before we begin, we have to order every column, lock, hinge, and screw that will be required. We cannot go into the next street, as in London, and get them cast at a minute's notice. Mr. 50 says somebody will have to go to England very soon and superintend the selection of a large order of this kind. I only wish I may be the man. There before her lay the deposit receipt for the £200, and beside it the elegant present of night. Elfride grew cold, then her cheeks felt heated by beating blood. If by destroying the piece of paper the whole transaction could have been withdrawn from her experience, she would willingly have sacrificed the money it represented. She did not know what to do in either case. She almost feared to let the two articles lie in juxtaposition. So antagonistic were the interests they represented, that a miraculous repulsion of one by the other was almost to be expected. That day she was seen little of. By the evening SE had come to a resolution, and acted upon it. The packet was sealed up with a tear of regret as she closed the case upon the pretty forms it contained directed, and placed upon the writing table in Knight's room. And a letter was written to Stephen, stating that as yet she hardly understood her position with regard to the money sent, but declaring that she was ready to fulfill her promise to marry him. After this letter had been written, she delayed posting it, although never ceasing to feel strenuously that the deed must be done. Several days passed. There was another Indian letter for Elfride. Coming unexpectedly, her father saw it, but made no remark why, she could not tell. The news this time was absolutely overwhelming. Stephen, as he had wished, had been actually chosen as the most fitting to execute the ironwork commission he had alluded to as impending. This duty completed, he would have 3 months' leave. His letter continued that he should follow it in a week, and should take the opportunity to plainly ask her father to permit the engagement. Then came a page expressive of his delight and hers at the reunion, and finally, the information that he would write to the shipping agents, asking them to telegraph and tell her when the ship bringing him home should be in sight, knowing how acceptable such information would be. Elfride lived and moved now as in a dream. Knight had at first become almost angry at her persistent refusal of his offering, and no less with the manner than the fact of it. But he saw that she began to look worn and ill, and his vexation lessened to simple perplexity. He ceased now to remain in the house for long hours together as before, but made it a mere center for antiquarian and geological excursions in the neighborhood. Throw up his cards and go away he fain would have done, but could not. And, thus, availing himself of the privileges of a relative, he went in and out the premises as fancy led him, but still lingered on. I don't wish to stay here another day, if my presence is distasteful, he said one afternoon. At first you used to imply that I was severe with you, and when I am kind you treat me unfairly. No. Don't say so. The origin of their acquaintanceship had been such as to render their manner towards each other peculiar and uncommon. It was of a kind to cause them to speak out their minds on any feelings of objection and difference, to be reticent on gentler matters. I have a good mind to go away and never trouble you again, continued Knight. She said nothing, but the eloquent expression of her eyes and wan face was enough to reproach him for harshness. Do you like me to be here, then? Inquired Knight gently. Yes, she said. Fidelity to the old love and truth to the new were ranged on opposite sides, and truth virtuously prevailed. Then I'll stay a little longer, said Knight. Don't be vexed if I keep by myself a good deal, will you? Perhaps something may happen, and I may tell you something. Mere coyness, said Knight to himself, and went away with a lighter heart. the trick of reading truly the enigmatical forces at work in women at given times, which with some men, is an unerring instinct, is peculiar to minds less direct and honest than knights. The next evening, about 5 o'clock, before knight had returned from a pilgrimage along the shore, a man walked up to the house. He was a messenger from Camelton, a town a few miles off, to which place the railway had been advanced during the summer. A telegram for Miss Swankert, and 3 and 6 pence, to pay for the special messenger. Miss Swankert sent out the money, signed the paper, and opened her letter with a trembling hand. She read, Johnson, Liverpool, to Miss Swankert, in Delstow, near Castle Botterill. A Marylis telegraphed off Holyhead, 4 o'clock. Expect will dock and land passengers at Canning's Basin 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Her father called her into the study. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.